Thanks to everyone for coming to the class this morning. We have a number of visitors. We want you to know that we're glad you're here, and also to tell you we're not normally this disorganized at 9 o'clock. We had a gospel meeting last week, and all the material that I handed out to you was up here, and we hid it for the meeting so we'd have more room. And we've just now located it, and you have it. Our lesson today is a continuation of Lesson 11, which begins on your page 47. My book is numbered just a little differently. And we were in the middle of the slide presentation concerning two misunderstood passages. We didn't get to the second one. So I'm going to begin with the end of the first one. That'll sink us, get us up to speed, and then we'll go into the second one this morning. Galatians 6:10 was one of the two misunderstood passages, and I want us to go back and look at our concluding thoughts on that particular passage. So the workbook, bottom of page 47, states, verse 10 tells us, one of the obligations we have as Christians is to help those less fortunate than we are. The verse includes all people, but emphasizes our duties to each other as Christians. It is not talking about what we do collectively, but what we must do personally. Other verses tell us who the church is to help and under what circumstances. This verse does not deal with church action. And while we believe most of that statement is true, we wanted to take a look at another view and asking the question, is verse 10 talking about individual benevolence? For years, I thought so. And I've heard many sermons on the subject, and they all relate to the fact that it is. I want you to look at another view and get your comments and thoughts on it. The context of this passage, which begins in verse 1, if you are familiar with 1 Corinthians 6, while speaking of the individual Christian as opposed to a local congregation, we are submitting to you that it is not addressing benevolence at all. Rather, the good of Galatians 6:10 has to do with spiritual good. There's not anything in the context about physical relief, but there is much about spiritual matters. The belief that the good of this passage is physical benevolence is widely held among brethren, but there is simply no contextual basis for such a position. Some of you know Fred Chance. Fred Chance, in the late 60s, was one of the men who helped found the Eastside Church of Christ. I had an occasion yesterday to visit with the author of that statement, Jess Jenkins. That statement came to my attention and the elders' attention regarding another issue back in December 2007. So why did I bring up Fred Chance? At the time that Jess reached this conclusion, he was preaching for the Westside Church in Irving, and Fred was a member there. And in a class arrangement, Jess presented the benevolence view of Galatians 6:10. Brother Chance raised his hand and challenged the statement. What ensued from there were several, I think it was just one class, if I remember what I was told yesterday, But it was like a mini debate. Jess prepared his notes. Fred prepared his. The structure was each would have 15 minutes to present his argument for his thinking. The other man would keep silent. The result of that was, and this is what I learned yesterday directly from Jess. Jess said, I was wrong. And Fred was correct. And he said, if brethren would just search out the context of the chapter, there's no way you could get physical benevolence into a context about spiritual good being rendered. So, I leave you with that. If you have questions or if you want to study it further, we'd be glad to do that offline. And I'm not insisting that you adopt that view. Just simply to say the elders have decided to so adopt it because we believe that the context of the passage is not addressing physical benevolence. Steve.
I agree with you that the context of the immediate passage doesn't address physical benevolence. However, I disagree in that the context, as you fit it in with other scriptural passages, could be indicative. And this is what I mean. Christ specifically pointed out, and there was a couple times when it's been pointed out, that the concept of go and be well to someone that is starving without feeding them is meaningless.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So that, if you start to look at, I guess that I would say all in all, overall, yeah, you would or would draw from it. Here's my question. This is my question. What is the significance if it is or isn't physical?
It would be a misapplication of that passage in the context because the context doesn't include physical benevolence.
Yeah, but what is the eternal issue here? What kind of problem does this cause with the Christian if you don't understand it? If you understand it one way or the other,
well,
what kind of problem does it cause with the Christian?
I would say it's important. And this is why we have classes. This is why we study our Bibles. To better understand the mind of God with respect to all Scripture. And by studying it, I tracked on the wrong path for so long. Maybe I just overread it, and maybe I assumed. But when I got to studying it, I realized there's no physical benevolence involved in the context. There are other passages, obviously, that direct us to respond in a limited benevolence within the local church and with the individual. There are a lot of things that an individual can do, can contribute to help those in need, but it's not here. That's the only thing. Steve?
Galatians 6:6. Let the one who has taught the word share all good things with the one who teaches.
Right.
And continuing, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, that will he also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life.
Right.
I read that as going either way and being both, if not easily could be both, a physical thing as well as a spiritual thing, either or. I mean, can't you see it that way?
No, I don't. We're going to cover Galatians 6:6 in a few minutes.
Okay, all right.
And maybe we just hold for that.
Sure.
But I don't see it that way. It's a whole different subject there. But it is still individual. It's not collective. It's not the local church. It's not addressed to the local church. 1 Corinthians is a letter written to the church, but the context is about individual action.
Well, I absolutely agree, by the way. It's individual, not...
Yeah. Okay. All right. Gerald, you had your...
I was going to say, verse 6:1 sets the context of the passage. And it says, if any man be overtaken in trespass, ye who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness, look into thyself, lest thou also be tempted.
Yeah.
That ties, that be tempted, it ties down there to being deceived. So it's all spiritual in the context.
Yeah. I would only ask you that you study it, think it through. Look at the context. You'll never get to the truth in Bible study when you consider a passage if you don't wrap that in the context. You have to do that. Someone told me a long ago, who's speaking, who are they talking to, and why? Just ask yourself those questions. And I think that'll help you. Also, when you come across a difficult passage, I no longer think that one is. I did it one time. When you come across a difficult passage, try to find its meaning in passages that speak to the same subject that are not that difficult, but are more clear. Okay? All right. Let's continue here. This is the other passage that is greatly misunderstood. James chapter 1, verse 27. It reads this way in the New King James. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble. If you have another version, you may have the word affliction in place of trouble. And to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Another verse that is often misapplied, to the church. Look at the passage. Keep oneself unspotted. That's not about collective action. That's about individual action. To note the setting for verse 27, we need to go back to verse 12. Why are we doing that? Context again, okay? In verse 12, James says that the man, not the church, that's in parentheses and is not in your text, who endures temptation will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised. In verses 13 through 15, James says, nor does he, parentheses God, tempt anyone. Each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. In verses 19 and 20, James tells us, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Christians, not churches. In verse 21, James says, receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls. Are we saved as individuals or churches? On the judgment day, is the church at Eastside going to stand before the Lord at judgment and be judged as a local church of Christ?
No, it's individual.
Individual all the way. Thank you. Come in. Let me get them some material. So now continuing. In verse 22, James instructs Christians to be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. In verses 23 and 24, James says that anyone who is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror, for he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. In verse 25, James tells the people to look into the Bible and do it. That this one will be blessed in what he does. And in verse 26, James writes, if anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. And so in verse 27, James writes, pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. We began at verse 12. You can go back to verse 1. The context follows all the way through. The whole chapter is speaking of the individual and his or her relationship to God. In the entire first chapter of James, the church is not mentioned even once. Okay, everybody on the same page? Any disagreement or comments?
This is the problem that the church is basically facing right now. I'll be honest with you, it's been a decade, I bet, since I've heard anybody discuss this subject matter at any of the churches that I've attended during that time period. I've got so many friends that I grew up that have left the sound church and gone to other places because they don't understand this.
Yeah.
We're just not teaching it enough to our young people as they're coming up, I think, for them to see the difference of where the differences are between the two branches of the Church of Christ.
Right.
And everything. But yeah. I'm not kidding. It's been 10 years easily since I've heard this even touched upon by anybody.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your comments. This book came to us from a brother that we know down at the Southside Congregation in Pasadena. Dee Bowman and Bubba Gardner preached there, and they were starting this study over a year ago. We were in Branson together with them. My friend mentioned this to me, and he had the book, and he gave me a copy of the book. We came back, the elders met on it, and decided we would. And in conjunction with this series, which began in January, Don Mitchell, our preacher here, began to preach sermons on this subject line. And it's been a tremendous asset. These are available on our website, by the way, if anybody cares to look at his sermons or this class and get all of the lessons.
That's
Gerald?
I was going to say, if he was interested, he could go to our website and
yeah.
listen to those.
We'll make you a copy of a pamphlet that has that on there later today.
It's on the bulletin.
Huh? Yeah, it's on the bulletin too. Julie does our bulletin, so she wants to be sure that you understand what's there. She works on that bulletin till 9 or 10 o'clock. Every Saturday night, so if you like it, just tell her. She'll appreciate it.
Yeah, this passage, Bill, is crystal clear. I agree with you that it delineates what is the individual's responsibility and there's a separation of these. And I know we've talked about that a lot. And I don't disagree. I want to clarify one thing. I don't disagree that from the fact that we as individuals have far greater responsibilities than the church as a whole, different responsibilities as the church as a whole.
Yeah.
And are allowed to do different things than the church is allowed as a group is allowed, the local church is allowed to do. I just want to make sure that's very clear. That
yeah.
I don't disagree with that statement.
That's a good point.
My only thing is that we, and this is the question to you is what this is. So, based on the passages we've read so far and all the study we've done so far, would it be an accurate statement to say that there are certain responsibilities of the church? They're narrow, they're clear, mm-hmm. those are the responsibilities of the church. The individual has other responsibilities. He also has things he's allowed to do to be benevolent and help. I can help my coworkers if they're in need.
Certainly.
And I should if they're in need.
Absolutely.
If I have the ability to help, I should help them.
Right.
And in fact, that reflects to the world who we are.
It does.
It shows the world who we are. And so, therefore, it is us standing out as a light in the world that we're willing to take care of those things as individuals.
Right.
Not as the church.
Right. And, Steve, as an individual, there isn't anything that keeps you from doing personal benevolence to anybody as long as it does not violate Scripture.
Exactly.
Got to stay in that vein. Okay. The conclusion was failure to properly distinguish, as our brother pointed out, between the personal obligations of an individual Christian and biblical authority for the church to act has resulted in many churches of Christ and all human denominations getting involved in many unauthorized activities. One of the big things that just pops up in mind is this sponsoring church arrangement. I know we've spent a lot of time since January talking about it. I don't think you can spend too much time defining it and talking about the problems associated with it as respects Bible authority. Churches, including many churches of Christ, are involved in numerous improper activities which have nothing to do with the work of Christ's church and in fact do not please the Lord. So that was the conclusion of the slide portion of the presentation. I direct you to your page 50. We have some questions. We usually handle all these questions at the end of our slide presentation, and so we begin that now. Question number one, why is it important to distinguish between duties of the Christian and the work of the church?
To be biblically authorized and right in God's sight.
Okay. Anybody else?
The individual has a lot broader ability to perform what needs to be done than the church does.
Yes. And we discussed that. Limited benevolence. Work of the church is what? Three things. What are they?
Evangelism.
Evangelism. What's the other one? All right. Now, wait a minute. Let's take them in this order. Evangelism. Someone said edification. Now let's handle benevolence. You got to put an adjective in front of that word. What is the adjective?
Limited.
Limited by the scriptures. So the work of the church is to evangelize, preach the gospel, teach the gospel of Christ, to edify, strengthen, build up its members, and to provide for saints in their benevolent needs within the boundaries of Scripture. So if you have someone in a local congregation that needs help, but cannot be helped for some scriptural reason out of the local treasury, how do they get relieved? Out of my pocket. And that's our problem. I put a dollar in the plate, 10 cents goes to Bowles Orphans Home, and I'm thrilled that I had a part in it. No, that's not the way it works. If you want to send money to Bowles Home, you're an individual. Write the check and send it. There's no problem with that. But the church cannot be involved. That's where this has been driven. So, if you begin to mix and intertwine personal responsibilities with what God has authorized in the church, you're going to end up in one big mix. Number two, don't you love true and false questions? True or false? Plural pronouns like us and we always mean the church. Explain your answer. First, is it true or false?
False.
False. Yes. What's one of the keys that gave you that if you knew nothing about the Bible?
Always,
there you go. Yeah. A lot of people have taken exams in here. Now then, explain your answer.
You have to look at the context.
Every time, Richard.
Every time.
Thank you. That's exactly correct. That'll keep us out of a lot of trouble. Is the examination of Galatians 6, 3 through 5, individual or collective? So we'll put the passage up. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one examine his own work, then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone, and not in regard to another. For each one shall bear his own load. So, individual, all the way through. Number four, explain in your own words how Galatians 6:6 could apply to the individual Christian. And here's the passage Steve had asked about earlier. And let the one who is taught the word share all good things with him who teaches. That's the New American Standard rendering. And so the question was, explain that, how it could apply to the individual Christian. Julie.
So the one, last I remember, one is singular.
Okay. So let's talk about this a minute. Don is our local evangelist here. In a few moments, he'll be delivering his sermon of the morning. Let the one who is taught, who is that?
Us.
Who does the teaching?
Don.
So what does that say? Oh, that's a beautiful statement, but what does it mean? Go ahead.
Let's pay him for what he does.
Let's pay him for what he does. There you go.
It's not very much, so he must not be doing a good job.
Yeah, he's been here since the mid-80s, so I guess it's okay. That's all that passage is saying. Now, can you make that say anything else?
Well, if you wanted to stretch it, you could read it and let the church, the group who's taught, you could turn it into a church, but you got to stretch some of the language.
A lot.
Yeah.
Elastic language. Don?
Yeah. I'd just like to say something about that verse. Share all good things. What did we say about context?
Yeah.
What's the context here?
The
teaching.
Good news.
Teaching.
So it's the exchange between the teacher and the teachee.
Right. But it does authorize for compensation to the teacher by the ones taught.
And years ago, that was done a lot. Individual Christians gave the gospel ministers out of their pocket, or certain goods out of the garden, or, you know, beef out of the herd.
That wasn't too long ago. In 1947, my mother, dad, and myself went on an East Coast car trip. We stopped in Toronto because our preacher from Lufkin, Texas, was Roy Cogdell, and he was holding a meeting there. The plan was to attend the meeting on Sunday, pick him up Monday morning, take him to the airport. Well, we had to also carry his compensation. Compensation was two pepper-cured hams. He couldn't get them on an airplane. We almost didn't find room in Dad's trunk for them. And he just said, "Tex, if you'll take these back to Lufkin, I'll tell you what I'll do. You can have one of them for just transporting." That was good. That makes your point. That's how he was compensated. He got no money, none, for that. They may have paid his expenses. I'm too young to even remember. But I do recall that. And that goes along with what he was saying. Steve?
Yeah, this is what I meant by not exclusively spiritual needs, because 6:6 is talking about a physical need that is being met. And that's what I meant when I said it's not exclusively about spiritual needs. It is exclusively about the individual,
right?
Not the church as a group, the individual. And if, that's it.
It's also talking about spiritual good.
It is.
As
it
the
is.
Whole thing it has been talking true. About.
But
right.
Was ham authorized?
Richard, I'm glad you asked that. We checked that out. It was kosher.
Okay.
Yeah. So that would have been scriptural. Julie.
One of the things that I think of, what is this? Let the one who has taught us share all good things with him who teaches. Should be him or whoever's teaching is, perhaps the speaker is a young Christian and doesn't quite understand, or is not quite, he's in the process of learning things. Maybe a more mature Christian afterward could say, "Have you read that first? Have you compared it with this? You know, here's what I found," and that, you know, or like, "Thank you for," even if it's not that situation, but "Thank you for preaching that today. I needed to hear that."
Excellent point.
Yeah.
Excellent
good. Point. Yeah. Very good. There's nothing like encouragement to one who teaches and preaches. Nothing like that. Not flattery. That's different. We're not talking about that. If I learn something, I generally compliment whoever is teaching or preaching and let them know that I did. Don?
Yeah,
I'm just going to make another comment about this. If the context of this is spiritual things, you can turn right over to 1 Corinthians 9 and find passage that talks about physical compensation.
Absolutely.
For those who preach or teach the gospel.
Right.
It doesn't have to be in this passage.
No, it doesn't.
And this is about spiritual things. So.
Yeah.
That's why I'm having a hard time seeing the compensation in this, passage. I think that goes back to the preconceived concept of 6:10 is still coming through on this 6:6.
Yeah.
I think we might need to drop the physical aspect out of 6:6 and leave it with the spiritual. And like I said, go back to the 1 Corinthians 9 to get the physical. Because if you throw in the physical compensation in this, then you might as well throw physical compensation into 6:10.
Yeah. Okay. Steve?
I agree with what, in fact, Gerald, I agree with Gerald. It's that's what was throwing me, is that this, if you look at the whole context of it and you say it's strictly a spiritual context, then you don't want to put the compensation into 6:6. It's got to have something to do with the spiritual side of it if you say it's strictly a spiritual context. Now, here is my uncertainty that still exists in it today, and I'll have to look into it a little further, is its relationship to the other biblical texts that exist that talk about physical compensation and how this fits in with that. Remember, again, take it in the local context, and you want to make sure it fits in the context of all the other passages.
That's right, and you're correct. And all of these passages have to fill into the context. You can't take it out of the context. And the context is spiritual good throughout 1 Corinthians 6. So, point well made. All right? Okay. Well, question number 5. Is the reward of Galatians 6, 7 through 9 individual, or is it collective? Those three passages read, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, this will he also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh shall from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit shall from the Spirit reap eternal life. And let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we shall reap if we do not grow weary." And the question is the reward of Galatians 6, 7 through 9 individual are collected?
Individual.
Okay. Obvious. All right. Question number 6. Is the instruction of Galatians 6:10 individual or collective? And we're asked to explain our answer. We covered this already. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially those of the household of faith. Is that individual or collective? I'm sorry?
Individual.
Individual?
I think it's
both. So whoever said individual now has an opportunity to explain your answer. Uh-oh. We may have hit a roadblock here. Is it individual or collective? The instruction of that passage.
Individual. I have an individual responsibility to do good to all men who need help, as long as it's a scriptural necessity. I mean, scriptural authorization to help them. I have no obligation to help someone that's down and out who professes atheism and spouts that, you know, unless I'm able to teach him, and a lot of them I am not able to teach. They just won't read it.
Right. Okay. Any other comments about it? Gerald?
I agree that it's individual because, as we have discussed earlier, the entire first part of the chapter and the rest of the chapter is individually directed. It's to the one, but the one can help.
It's not a collective instruction.
Right.
It's to us as individual. Well, who is the letter written to, somebody says? The Corinthian church. Well, then it's speaking of the church. No, it's speaking to the church, but not of the church. You see the difference?
There we get back to the misunderstanding of the church again, Bill.
Absolutely.
This assembly at Eastside is merely a collection of saints who agree to meet at a certain time, at a certain place, to study the Bible and receive instructions from a teacher, to sing praises to God, to observe the Lord's Supper, to pray and petition God. That's why we assemble. But it's not a church in the sense of the universal church.
Right. If Don gets up this morning, I don't know what his subject is, and he preaches to the Eastside Local Church of Christ, but he asked us as individuals to do something that's scripturally authorized. See the difference? It's to the church, but it's not of the church. He's trying to get us to see what our individual. When the invitation is extended in a worship assembly, is it to the whole church? That's not even the context of the invitation. Oh, it's to individuals to think about their spiritual condition, address whatever needs they might have, and if they feel they need to respond publicly, that they do it. That's all individual, and we understand that. Steve?
Yeah, I don't want to answer, I don't jump in the weeds about all this, but I just want to bring this up so maybe we can talk about it sometime later. How, when we're talking about things that are addressed to the church, and accountability of the individual versus accountability of the local church. Is there an accountability of the local church? If so, or if not, how does the churches in Revelations fit into that? When those churches are addressed directly, you shall have your lampstand removed. Who is being talked to in that message?
I was thinking of that also.
Yeah, so, like I said, I don't want to get off track today.
Yeah.
Just something I would like to see, maybe we could look into a little further. Later.
Sure.
Put it on 3x5 and give it to Bill, and it'll be our next meeting.
Do what, Gerald?
Put it on a 3x5, give it to Bill, and we'll have it on our next meeting.
Study.
Oh, a 3x5. There you go, Steve.
Put it on a 3x5, I'll put it on a 3x5.
Yeah, there you go. 3x5, give it to me, we'll put it into the men's Bible study.
Manila rule.
And then we'll come back and explain to the ladies what we decided. Okay. Okay, question 7. Checking my clock here. Is the warning of James 1:13 through 15 about temptation, individual or collective? Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, for he himself does not tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. Then, when lust is conceived, it gives birth to sin, and when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death. Question is this warning individual or collective?
Individual.
Has to be. All right, question 8. Do you think James 1:21 through 25 is speaking to the individual or to the church? What makes you think that? Therefore, putting aside all filthiness and all that remains of wickedness, in humility receive the word implanted, which is able to save your souls. But prove yourselves doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror. For once he has looked at himself and gone away, he has immediately forgotten what kind of person he was. But one who looks intently at the perfect law, the law of liberty, and abides by it, not having become a forgetful hearer but an effectual doer, this man shall be blessed in what he does. What makes you think, whichever way you go, whether it's individual or church? Who was James writing to? A church or saints?
To the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad.
All right, there you go. Didn't say anything about churches. But the 12 tribes, at the time this was written, they were all scattered. That began back in Acts 7, 8. Okay? But they're Christians. This is wording that will help Christians maintain their relationship to Christ. So, it's got to be individual. Nothing about the church is mentioned here. And it's for our personal instructions. Could James 1:26 be applied to the church collectively or individually? It says collectively. Explain your answer. If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. Individual or collective?
Individual.
Bridles his tongue. What would lead one to conclude that James 1:27 is a collective responsibility? This is pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unsustained by the world. What would lead one to conclude that that could be collective?
The pure religion and undefiled before God. The church is supposed to follow the religion, thus the doctrine of Christ. But they lose the focus of that. As we have discussed, the church is a collective of saints, individuals, not one entity of itself. It's a collection.
Right.
Okay. But that's how I see them.
Okay, one of the things that I think would answer that question, what would lead one to conclude this is a collective responsibility, is this one. And we've talked about it before, and this is what gets in our way. The emotional tug on our heartstrings. That we're going to say, oh no, but we really need to do this. As the we being what? As a church, Don?
The answer, as far as I am concerned, is both. Because when we say we, it depends upon in your own mind whether you're thinking of the church doing it or am I doing it. Because the church is made up of individuals. So
correct.
It's both individual and collectively, if you're talking about all of the saints that attend at that location. We all are responsible for the same thing.
Yeah.
Each and every one of us.
But are we responsible as a collective, according to that passage, or responsible as individuals, according to that passage? What has been the context in the first chapter? We've gone through all the major
right.
verses. They're individual. Can the church render help to a widow or an orphan under certain circumstances? What did we say the work was? Evangelism, edification, and limited benevolence. But it doesn't come out of this passage. That's the thing. Our time is up. We'll begin the last lesson in this series next Sunday, lesson number 12. I want to thank everybody for your comments, your questions. I really appreciate your participation.